The road was supposed to be routine, a short drive, a custody exchange, nothing that raised alarms. Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly left that morning expecting to be back by midday. They never arrived. By early afternoon, calls went unanswered. Texts stopped. The silence stretched long enough to feel wrong. Family members retraced the plan and realized there was no reason for the delay. Law enforcement was notified. What began as a missing persons report shifted fast. Their vehicle was found abandoned on a rural Oklahoma road, doors closed, personal items inside. No sign of a breakdown, no sign they walked away. The scene suggested interruption, not choice. Investigators faced a narrowing window, two women gone, a custody dispute in the background, multiple relationships intersecting under stress. Every minute without contact raised the stakes. What no one knew yet was that this was not a random disappearance. It was not a fight that went too far. The path ahead would expose planning, belief-driven justification, and a level of coordination that turned a simple exchange into a calculated end. Chapter 1. Setup and Stakes. The morning began like a task that had been done before. A custody exchange. A short drive across rural Oklahoma. Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly left with a plan and a timeline. They expected to be back before the day slipped away. Nothing about the trip suggested danger. The road they took cut through open land, long stretches without traffic, cell service that faded in and out. It was familiar terrain for locals, the kind of place where time moved slow and routines mattered. They had a set location for the exchange. They had a window. They had reason to be precise. By late morning, the first concern surfaced. The exchange time passed without contact. A delay would not have been unusual on its own, but the silence was. Messages were sent, calls were made, no answer. Minutes stretched into an hour. Family members checked their own assumptions. Maybe there was a mix-up. Maybe the meeting point changed. Maybe one of them had stepped away from the phone. The explanations felt thin even as they were spoken. Early afternoon arrived without resolution. No update, no callback. That was when concern hardened into fear. The absence was now measurable. The plan had failed without explanation. Law enforcement was notified. The report was taken seriously but cautiously. Two adults missing, a defined route, a known purpose. Officers began with the basics: names, vehicle description, last known location, intended destination. The vehicle details stood out immediately. It was reliable. There had been no mention of mechanical issues. No indication of a detour. The disappearance did not fit a breakdown or voluntary stop. Investigators pulled phone data with consent from family. The last signal placed the women on a rural road short of the exchange point. After that, nothing. No movement, no handoff, no return. Search efforts began along the likely route. Patrol units drove the roads inch by inch. Ditches were checked, pull-offs scanned, fields examined for tire tracks or disturbed ground. The terrain offered too many places to hide something and too few witnesses to narrow it down. The abandoned vehicle was found before nightfall. It sat off the roadway, not wrecked, not disabled. Doors closed, windows intact. It was positioned as if it had been deliberately stopped. Inside were personal items that should not have been left behind. Phones were not recovered at the scene. There were no signs of an accident. The location changed the tone of the case. This was no longer a question of delay. The vehicle placement suggested interruption. The women had not chosen to leave everything behind. Something had forced the moment. Officers secured the area. The road was quiet, wind moved through dry grass. The stillness worked against urgency. There was no obvious struggle visible from a distance. No skid marks, no broken glass, no blood. That absence was its own signal. Crime scene technicians documented the vehicle. Photographs, measurements, notes on orientation and condition. Everything was recorded because nothing was obvious. The smallest detail might matter later. Investigators spoke carefully with family members. They asked about routines, about recent stress, about the custody arrangement itself. The questions were direct but restrained. At this stage, no conclusions were offered. What was clear was that the women had been on a schedule. They were not wandering. They were not sightseeing. Their disappearance had a time stamp and a purpose tied to it. As daylight faded, the search widened. Canvassing extended to nearby properties. Residents were asked if they had seen a vehicle stopped on the road, if they had heard anything unusual. Most had not. Rural isolation worked against memory. Nightfall closed in with no sign of the women. Search teams returned at first light. Ground crews moved through fields and wooded patches near where the vehicle had been found. K-9 units worked scent trails that ended abruptly. The terrain did not give answers easily. The case briefing that morning reflected the shift in stakes. This was now treated as a potential abduction. The lack of struggle at the vehicle did not rule it out. It suggested control, surprise, compliance under pressure. Investigators faced an uncomfortable question early. Had the women been intercepted by someone they recognized? The custody exchange context mattered. It provided motive without proof. It offered a narrow pool of potential connections without naming anyone. It explained why the women were traveling and why they were predictable that day. But at this stage, motive was only a theory. No suspects were identified, no public statements assigned blame. Law enforcement emphasized facts: two missing women, one abandoned vehicle, a defined route, a timeline that stopped mid-journey. The pressure came from the clock. Every hour without contact reduced the likelihood of finding them alive. That reality sat heavy over every decision. The search did not slow. Helicopters were requested to scan areas unreachable by foot. Volunteers gathered. The community responded with concern rather than panic. The setting felt wrong for something violent, and that made it harder to accept what might have happened. Behind the scenes, investigators began mapping relationships connected to the custody case, not to accuse, to understand the landscape. Who knew the schedule? Who had reason to expect the women on that road at that time? Those questions remained internal. Public messaging stayed narrow. Officials avoided speculation. They asked for tips, they asked for sightings, they asked for patience. As the second day progressed, the absence became heavier. There were no ransom demands, no contact, no attempt to explain the disappearance. That silence pointed away from impulsive action and toward intent. Still, nothing concrete tied the disappearance to violence. There was no proof of harm, no recovered evidence of a crime beyond the vehicle itself. Investigators held the line. They documented, they searched, they waited for something to break the stillness. By the end of the second day, the case had shifted again, not because of a new discovery, but because of what had not appeared. No sign of voluntary movement, no financial activity, no digital trace beyond the last known signal. The possibility that the women were alive but incapacitated faded with each passing hour. The vehicle remained the only silent witness. It held answers that could not yet be read. It told investigators where the story paused, not where it ended. The chapter closed with more questions than facts. Who stopped them? Why that road? Why that moment? And whether the custody exchange was merely context or the trigger itself. Those answers would not come easily, but the case had already crossed a line. What began as a routine drive now demanded accountability. The silence was no longer empty. It was charged. Chapter 2, Escalation and Reversal. The investigation shifted from searching terrain to dissecting time. Investigators rebuilt the final hours minute by minute, starting well before the drive. They needed to know what pressure existed before the women got into the vehicle. Custody disputes often carried emotion, but emotion alone did not explain disappearance without trace. Interviews began with family and widened outward. Schedules were compared, messages reviewed, calls logged. The focus stayed narrow. Who knew the exchange plan? Who knew the route? Who knew the timing down to the hour? The custody arrangement itself came under careful review. There had been tension. That was not unusual. Disagreements over exchanges, schedules, and boundaries were documented in prior communications. Nothing in isolation suggested violence. Together, the pattern showed escalation. Investigators noted recent changes, adjustments to meeting locations, arguments over control and access. The women had expressed concern about unpredictability, but had not reported direct threats. That absence mattered. It suggested either confidence or an underestimation of risk. Phone records offered partial clarity. Messages before the drive were ordinary. Logistics, timing, no alarm, no distress. The last outgoing signals aligned with the expected route. Then nothing. No emergency calls, no sudden activity. That silence raised a critical question. If the women were intercepted, it happened quickly. There was no prolonged confrontation visible in the data, no evidence of a struggle captured digitally. Whatever occurred likely relied on surprise or authority. Investigators expanded interviews to include individuals connected indirectly to the custody dispute. friends, relatives, associates. The goal was not accusation, it was pattern recognition. That effort produced the first turn. Multiple accounts pointed to a small circle of people who shared strong beliefs and a deep sense of grievance tied to the custody outcome. The language used in messages and conversations stood out. It framed the dispute not as a legal disagreement, but as a moral wrong. Detectives tread carefully. Belief alone was not evidence. Many people held strong views without acting on them. But the framing mattered. It suggested justification beyond emotion. Digital analysis deepened the concern. Location data from phones linked to persons of interest showed proximity to the route around the time of disappearance. Not proof, but no longer coincidence. The investigation began to show signs of coordination. Financial records were reviewed, no unusual withdrawals, no sudden purchases after the disappearance. That absence cut against theories of ransom or opportunistic crime. This was not about money. Surveillance checks followed. Rural areas offered limited coverage, but highway cameras captured vehicles entering and leaving nearby corridors. Analysts flagged overlaps in timing. Vehicles associated with persons of interest appeared in the broader area within the relevant window. The pattern did not suggest chance. Investigators now faced a pivot point. The case was no longer about where the women might have gone. It was about who positioned themselves to meet them. Law enforcement adjusted strategy. Search efforts continued, but investigative resources shifted toward building probable cause. Warrants were prepared, data requests expanded. Every step was deliberate. Any misstep could compromise a case that was still circumstantial. Interviews grew more pointed. Questions tested consistency. Timelines were challenged. Some accounts shifted under pressure. Small discrepancies emerged. Not enough to charge, enough to document. One detail became central. The women had stopped voluntarily. There was no evidence of a forced collision or ambush from a hidden position. That reinforced the theory of recognition. Someone they trusted or felt compelled to comply with had caused them to stop. Investigators considered the dynamics of authority, family ties, custody power, moral framing. Control did not require weapons if compliance was expected. Behind closed doors, detectives discussed ideology. They did not label it publicly. Internally, they acknowledged that belief systems could normalize extreme action when reinforced within a group. That did not make violence inevitable. It made it possible. The case reached a midpoint marked not by discovery of the victims, but by confirmation of planning. Communications recovered from devices showed discussions that framed the custody situation as an injustice needing correction. Language emphasized duty, righteousness, and urgency. There were references to action without explicit detail. The tone was resolute. Investigators separated allegation from proof. The messages did not order harm. They did not name targets, but they demonstrated a mindset willing to escalate. Search teams were redirected based on new intelligence. Areas tied to persons of interest were prioritized. Properties, remote land, places where privacy aligned with opportunity. The pressure intensified. Detectives knew that delay favored those who planned ahead. Evidence could be destroyed, memories rehearsed, stories aligned. Legal thresholds guided every move, warrants required articulation, judges required clarity, investigators built affidavits that stuck to verifiable facts, proximity, timing, communications, pattern. When warrants were executed, they did not yield immediate resolution. No confession, no clear physical evidence tying anyone directly to harm. The absence frustrated but did not derail the case. Then came the reversal. A new piece of information shifted the landscape. Forensic review of recovered data uncovered planning markers that predated the disappearance by weeks. Route familiarity, meeting expectations, discussions that aligned with the exchange date. The event was no longer isolated, it was scheduled. That realization narrowed the field. Spontaneous actors fell away. Only those with foresight and shared intent remained viable. Investigators recognized the structure of a plot without yet holding its center. They knew coordination existed. They knew belief provided justification. What they still lacked was the final link between planning and outcome. The search for the women continued under mounting pressure. Each day without recovery weighed heavier. The community asked questions. Officials maintained restraint. They would not speculate. By the end of the chapter, the investigation stood at a threshold. The disappearance was now understood as intentional and organized. The custody dispute was no longer background, it was the axis. What remained unknown was where the plan ended and how far its authors were willing to go to see it through. The next phase would answer that, Chapter 3, Resolution and Aftermath. The break came quietly, no dramatic discovery, no sudden confession. It arrived through accumulation. Data aligned, timelines tightened, search areas narrowed until there were fewer places left to look. Investigators located the bodies of the two women in a remote area tied to the expanding web of evidence. The recovery confirmed what the investigation had been building toward for days. The disappearance had ended in homicide. The scene was secured and processed with care. Forensic teams worked methodically, every step followed protocol. The focus stayed on facts that could stand in court. Cause and manner of death were determined through examination. The findings confirmed intentional killing. There was no evidence of accident or self-harm. Law enforcement notified the families. The moment carried finality and devastation. What had begun as hope for recovery ended as confirmation of loss. Officials emphasized dignity and restraint. Details were limited. The investigation was still active. With recovery complete, the case shifted fully into prosecution mode. Arrests followed in coordinated actions. Multiple individuals were taken into custody. Charges reflected premeditation and conspiracy. Investigators laid out the structure of the plot. It was not a single decision made in anger. It was an agreement built over time. Evidence presented by law enforcement showed planning that extended beyond the day of the custody exchange. Communications demonstrated shared intent. Movements matched the victim's route. The abandoned vehicle was no longer an isolated clue. It was the pivot point of the plan. Authorities confirmed that belief-based justification played a role. The group involved framed the custody dispute as a moral violation rather than a legal process. That framing allowed escalation. It turned grievance into obligation. Officials were careful in language. They did not generalize belief systems. They did not name ideology beyond what was documented. The focus stayed on actions, not labels. The murder plot relied on predictability, the exchange schedule, the route, the expectation of compliance. The victims were intercepted because their presence was anticipated. The stop was voluntary under perceived authority. Forensic evidence tied locations, devices, and timelines together. Each piece alone was insufficient. Together, they formed a chain. Prosecutors outlined the case publicly once charges were filed. Allegations were clearly labeled. Evidence was summarized without speculation. The narrative presented showed coordination, role division, and intent. The custody dispute was identified as the motive. Control and grievance were central. The goal was not negotiation, it was removal. Community reaction was swift and heavy. Rural Oklahoma communities are close-knit. News spread quickly. Vigils were held. The shock was not only that violence occurred, but that it was planned by people known to the families. Law enforcement addressed public concern directly. They emphasized that the threat was contained, arrests were made, there was no ongoing danger to the community. Attention turned to accountability. Court proceedings began with arraignments, defendants entered pleas, the legal process moved forward deliberately. Investigators continued to separate proven facts from allegations as evidence was disclosed. The custody case itself ended by consequence. The legal dispute that had driven the exchange no longer existed. The children at the center of the conflict were placed under protection. The system responded after the fact. Questions followed that had no easy answers. How warning signs were missed, how belief hardened into permission, how ordinary logistics became the setting for murder. Officials acknowledged limits. Law enforcement could respond to crimes. They could not predict belief-driven escalation without overt threats. The case exposed gaps between legal processes and emotional realities. The final weight of the case rested with the families. Statements described loss beyond measure, two women gone because a dispute was allowed to become a mission. The cost was permanent. Investigators closed the case file with clarity rather than relief. They had answers. They did not have satisfaction. The resolution confirmed the worst outcome, even as it delivered accountability. The last lesson of the case was not procedural. It was human. Control, when justified by belief and reinforced by group agreement, can override restraint. When that happens, routine moments become points of no return. The road that morning was ordinary, The plan was simple, the ending was not. The truth landed with weight. The cost was irreversible.